You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who keeps the alternative medicine wackos at bay. And this is a show for people who had never listened to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question, you're embarrassed to take your regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call, 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. If you're listening to us live, the number 754-227-3647. That's 754-double-deuce-penis. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine, at Lady Diagnosis, and at Dr. Scott WM, and visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Go to our merchandise store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on the show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, or whatever. All right, very good. Hey, don't forget, please don't forget, go to stuff.drsteve.com. That's stuff.drsteve.com for all your online shopping needs. And if you need earbuds, go to tweakedaudio.com. It's our friends from Franklin, Tennessee. They have the best earbuds for the price on the market and the best customer service anywhere. And if you will use offer code FLUID, F-L-U-I-D, you will get 33% off your order. It's insane. Don't forget Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. And if you're interested in doing the Noom app, which we'll talk a little bit about later, noom.drsteve.com. That's noom.drsteve.com. You get 2 weeks free and 20% off your order. They're not actually a sponsor. It's just my referral link. But I am a great believer. I want other people to try it. 2 weeks free, 20% off at noom.drsteve.com. And if you're interested in getting archives of this show or premium content such as it is, go to premium.drsteve.com. You can download the app. A couple of people have been having some trouble with the app lately, but Libsyn is working on it. They will have it fixed. In the meantime, you can use your premium membership at drsteve.com. It works just fine. And let me know how that's doing if you're having any problems at all. All right. Very good. Big deal in the news, Dr. Scott. This assault on the artificial sweetener consortium. This is from a very prestigious journal called Stroke, and the title is Artificially Sweetened Beverages and Stroke, Coronary Artery Disease and All-Cause Mortality in the Women's Health Initiative. So now when you read the article in the medical journalism literature, it says artificially sweetened drinks are linked to stroke and heart disease. So you go, oh my God, if I'm drinking artificially sweetened drinks, I'm going to have a heart attack or a stroke. So I'm just going to read to you from this abstract from the journal Stroke. It said, we examine the association between self-reported consumption of artificially sweetened beverages and stroke and its subtypes, coronary heart disease and all-cause mortality. All-cause mortality just means you just died from whatever. You could die. You could be included in that if you died from getting run over by a truck.
Okay.
Gotcha. So this analytic cohort included 81,714 women from the Women's Health Initiative observational study. First off, this is an observational study. So it's not a double-blind placebo-controlled study, which would be difficult to do. But they looked at 93,000 the whole study looked at 93,000 postmenopausal women of ages 50 to 79 years at baseline, and they enrolled from 93 to 98. So it was a prospective time study in that they identified people and then followed them over time. So the results of this study, most participants, these were 64% of people, were infrequent consumers, which meant they never drank an artificially sweetened drink or less than one a week. That's me. Mm-hmm. The only time I drink a Diet Coke or anything similar is if I go to the movies, mm-hmm. I'll get a large Diet Raspberry Coke, which I don't know why. It's something about going to the movie. I love it. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I was an organic chemist, so it has this sort of what we call an ester smell. It's a chemical smell. It comes right up. I guess it reminds me of a better age when I was working in an organic chemistry lab, but it smells like organic chemistry
that
to me.
That should be the first red sign.
Of course.
It smells like some kind of chemical thing.
Yeah, I love it. It smells good. So
it tastes like nothing that could be nothing natural.
Taste like raspberries. No. It tastes like chemicals, but I like the taste. So
that's cool.
So I like that one, and that's maybe once a month, if that.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, if I'm in the physician's or the provider's lounge, and they don't have anything else, I'll drink a Diet Coke. But otherwise, I drink unsweetened tea. Mm-hmm. Can't stand.
Oh gosh, no.
For those of you who are not from the South, you don't know what we're talking about when about sweet tea. When they make sweet tea, we're not talking about you get, unsweet tea like you get everywhere else in the world and then add a little bit of sugar to it.
Yeah.
They will get a gallon of – look up a recipe.
I know where you're going with this. I'm looking at it right
now. It's ridiculous how much sugar they'll put in. But in a gallon, I don't know if it's one or two cups of sugar, and they make simple syrup and then pour that in there. And it's so sickeningly, disgustingly sweet. You got a recipe? For Southern
I'm looking for, our favorite little quick sudden service restaurant.
Yeah, but don't use their recipe. Do they have their recipe?
It does. It gives us a nutritional value.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I do want that. Thank you. I know where you're going with that.
Yeah, I mean, because we love this place, but that's the sweetest damn tea on the face of the earth.
Okay, so here it is. A pinch of baking soda just to buffer it. Mm-hmm. 2 cups of boiling water, 6 tea bags, 3/4 cup of white sugar, and 6 cups of cool water. So, 1/3 of it is going to be simple syrup.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm crazy. I'm interested that they put the baking soda in there. I wonder why they're buffering the solution.
For some reason, yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
It's crazy.
But, Dr. Scott will look and see if he can get the nutritional information as far as calories per serving on that.
Okay, so in a in a 32-ounce cup of sweet tea.
Which is the minimum at the restaurant we're talking about you can get.
52.
Okay.
Sugar grams.
Oh, 52 grams of sugar. How many calories is that?
That would be 187.
200 calories right there.
Yep.
That is 2 Yazo, Greek yogurt chocolate with chocolate chip ice cream bars. Well, they're frozen yogurt bars, but it's 2 of those.
Yep.
Wait, you said 200 and how much?
It was 200 calories.
Just 200
52
even. Yeah.
Grams of sugar per serving.
Yeah. Well, that's just 2 teaspoons, though, right? And wait, how many grams?
No, I'm looking. I'm looking at
grams of sugar in 1 teaspoon. Okay, so this will give us an idea. Oh my goodness, 4 grams of sugar is equal to 1 teaspoon. And you said it's 52.
Yeah.
Alexa, what's 52 divided by 4?
2 divided by 4 equals 13.
So it's 13 teaspoons.
I guarantee it.
It's, in one glass.
It's so sweet. You almost have to drink it like with a spoon. It's so thick.
I got some in my mouth not too long ago. I had to spit it out. That's how horrible it is to me. But anyway, so why were we talking about? Surely to goodness, drinking an artificially sweetened drink every once in a while has got to be better than that.
You would think.
But they were looking at people who were infrequent consumers. So that's me. Only 5.1% of people consumed greater than two artificially sweetened beverages per day. And what they found was those consuming the highest level of artificially sweetened beverages compared to never or rarely, in other words, people like me, had significantly greater likelihood of all endpoints except hemorrhagic stroke after controlling for multiple, you know, covariates. Like, they controlled for people who had diabetes and people who had already had a history of heart disease and stuff like that.
Sure.
But I'm very unimpressed by these numbers. So for coronary heart disease, the hazard ratio was 1.16, which means a 16% increase in heart disease. Now, this is one of those, this is a relative risk. The absolute risk is very small. Mm-hmm. But the range on that went from 1.07 to 1.26, which means that it went from 7% to 26%, and you figure it's somewhere between that. If you look at all stroke, it starts at 1.02, so maybe a 2% increase.
Okay.
And for ischemic stroke, 1.06, that's sort of your normal stroke. So I drilled down into this and found that most of the things that they found were not statistically significant. Mm-hmm. So when they look at outcomes with exclusions, where they're excluding people who already had disease and stuff like that, ischemic stroke, that's just your normal stroke where the brain doesn't get enough oxygen. Mm-hmm. The people, and this is compared to people who never drink them or less than one a week, was never statistically significant. As a matter of fact, in the group that drank greater than two drinks per day, that was the only one that was slightly significant, and that was it had a hazard ratio of 1.38. So they had a 38% increase in stroke, but that ranged from 1.05 to 1.81. So there seems to be an effect there. But when you looked at 5 to 7 per week, it was actually slightly protective.
It doesn't sound right, does
no,
it?
No, their hazard ratio was 0.96, so they had 4% less ischemic stroke if you drank 5 to 7 per week. Hmm. And it was slightly more in the group that drank 1 to 4. So if you drank 1 to 4 a week, it was 99% risk. Hmm. So they had a 1% protection. Whereas if it was 5 to 7, it was lower than that. There was 4% protection. Mm. So these numbers are kind of all over the place. Hemorrhagic stroke, these are people who bleed into the brain. Drinking 1 to 4 a week was protective to the tune of 0.88. So 22% less hemorrhagic stroke in the group of people that drank some artificially sweetened beverages compared to those that didn't drink any at all. Now, this was not statistically significant. In other words, it didn't rise to the level where you could say, yes, this is a real effect. Mm-hmm. So very many of these all-cause mortality. None of those were statistically significant. If you drank 1 to 4 per week, there was a 3% protection. So if you took this all the way to the bank, you could say, well, you know, drinking 1 to 4 seems to be beneficial for people.
You know what they're,
so,
you know what
this, so this is the problem with statistics. You know, right. The journalists are just showing this sort of, and they're not showing a causation.
Right.
They're showing a correlation. They're not saying that this caused
causes.
It.
Right.
They're saying it's correlated with it. So people who drink a lot more artificial beverages, maybe people who are trying to lose weight and then they're binge eating because you and I have talked about mm-hmm. this, that when you drink artificially sweetened beverages, the one argument against them that I buy that I think is makes total sense is that the body's expecting, you know, it gets that sweet flavor. Mm-hmm. So it's expecting calories. Mm-hmm. When it doesn't get them, it starts to crave them. Mm-hmm. And then you start eating more.
Right.
So there's more to this. Obviously, drink shit in moderation. Why does everything have to be sweet? That's right. The thing. Just, can you drink water?
Yeah. You know, your coffee should not taste like your tea, which should not taste like your peanut butter, which should not taste like your your cereal or whatever. I mean,
right.
all
doesn't
these
all
things,
have to taste the same.
You know,
right.
coffee should taste like coffee, and tea should taste like tea.
Oh, there you go.
You know, peanut butter should taste like peanut butter. Hey, but you know what that reminds me of? And just a kind of a segue there. It sounds like, you know, the study that came out years ago about people who consume alcohol, and how abstainers have the shortest lifespan, and people who drink moderately, kind of what you're describing now, have the most protection and tend to live longer, healthier lives.
Well, maybe just moderation in general.
It's moderation, exactly. A little bit of this is probably not so bad.
Yeah, it's not so much that the artificially sweetened drinks in moderate amounts are actually protective. Because
right.
remember, this is correlation, not causation. Mm-hmm. I think, Dr. Scott, I'm going to give you one of these mm-hmm. for that. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
A dinger.
Yeah. Well, you son of a bitch. Okay,
give yourself a bill!
Is that it? Those people may be people that embark on a lifestyle of moderation mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. And what my sort of tome or trope on moderation is everything in moderation, including everything in moderation, which means if you're a slave to moderation, you're going to be causing yourself stress. So every once in a while, you need to blow it out your ass.
Right, right. You can only stay in the middle of the road so long.
Yes.
Every once in a while, you got to speed up a little bit.
So that,
or slow down. Yeah.
This may be all this article is telling us.
Mm-hmm.
We will have
moderation
to,
is a good thing.
We will have to, and that's just our interpretation of
right.
it. But I'm unimpressed by a lot of these numbers, and they're not really trying to make any claims. They said, in this study of well-characterized postmenopausal women in the United States, self-reported consumption of ASBs was associated with increased risk of ischemic stroke, coronary heart disease, and all-cause mortality. A novel finding of this study is that higher risk was associated with ischemic stroke. Oh, okay, blah, blah, blah. Because of the observational nature of this study, however, the possibility of residual confounding cannot be excluded. In other words, this is an observational study. This isn't how we make conclusions about stuff.
Right.
No matter what they put in the newspaper, that your artificially sweetened beverages are causing heart attack and stroke, they are not saying that. And the authors specifically say that, but you won't read that in a lot of the journalistic medical journalism articles that you read. You know, they love stuff like this to say, well, this is bad, and then this is bad. And the next week, you'll see that, well, the same thing is good. And I'm not a huge fan of artificially sweetened beverages, but I am a fan of the truth, and we still don't know
right.
the truth.
Right.
It seems to be a correlation between drinking a shitload of this stuff and some bad outcomes in a very small number of people.
Right, and some people, right.
Yeah, but anyway.
Cool.
You know, we need to do these studies, but now, so how would you determine whether these things actually caused? You would have to do a study where you did a prospective, and we'll define all these, double-blind placebo-controlled study of artificially sweetened beverages, and it wouldn't even have to be beverages. What you could do is put them, if you think it's the sweetener, because
mm-hmm.
what else could it be? The rest is just water, right? Water and carbonation.
Mm-hmm.
So you give people water and carbonation if you want to control for that. And then you give them a pill that's got either the sweetener in it, or it's got sugar in it, or it could have an inert substance. I would do all three.
Right.
So you'd have three arms to the study, a true placebo, a sugar arm, and then an artificial sweetener. And of course, let's use aspartame because that's the one everybody loves to shit on.
Mm.
And then you have to control for everything else. Smoking, diabetes, heart disease. If you've got a diabetic over here, you better have a diabetic over here. You got to cancel them out. And you and I, if we were doing this study, would do a survey. I'm sure that there are surveys on moderate lifestyle that have been validated,
okay.
so that you can control for that too. Yeah. These are people that kind of practice a moderate lifestyle, or they're extreme. You know,
right.
vegans, they're extreme in the sense of that they're not in the mainstream.
Right.
Crazy keto people that only eat mayonnaise, steak, and bacon.
Bacon for... Yeah.
That's another extreme.
Yep.
And for the keto people out there, we I'm in favor of a ketogenic diet, just not that one. Mm. So you have to control for all that. And then we would follow these people for 10, you'd have to, the fewer people you have, the longer you got to follow them. So let's get 10,000 people and then follow them over the space of 10 years. Okay. That should give us some numbers. Mm. And then at the end of it, we can decode everything and see if there was a correlation between taking artificially sweetened. And you got to control their diet, too.
Sure.
You see how difficult this study would be. Yeah. Because you can't have these people going out and they're in the placebo arm and they're drinking a bunch of, aspartame sweetened drinks.
Mixed drinks.
And, fucking and the whole thing up.
Or some ice cream that's got some sweeteners in it or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. That's why this is so difficult. That's right. Why we don't know the answer to this. Because, number one, who's got the money to do that study? Who gives enough of a shit about it to do that study? And who's going to administer it? I mean, that's a huge undertaking.
Big undertaking.
That's why they love to do these observational studies, because they can just take a whole shitload of people that are coming to the clinic anyway and then enroll them in the study and just follow them and then data mine.
Mm, sure.
And you get a publication out of it and you get newspaper articles written about you.
Mm-hmm. Or they'll do preliminary studies on mice or something like that. Something they can
control. Well, that's true.
Something they can control.
That's true.
Yeah.
Could do that, too. Yeah. We could do it on mice.
Yeah. It'd be a little easier to manage.
But then you can't generalize it to humans because mice aren't humans.
So
it's difficult. Yeah. That's why we don't know. That's why we're still arguing about this shit decades later, you know?
Yep.
Anyway. All right.
Love it.
So there you go. Do you have one you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I thought real quickly, I thought it was interesting. I saw a little thing on the Google News that was talking about how females tend to die of heart attacks.
When they have them.
When they have them, because their symptoms are different, right?
Okay.
And this is...
Well, you just ruined the whole... that's a spoiler.
Oh. Well, I just pulled it. Hey, that was my point.
See, you did it right. Yeah, see, the medical journalistic, not all of them. There's some really good ones out there, but very many of those folks would say women die more often of heart attacks,
which is not
true. And
that
would start to imply that maybe women don't get quality health care but the spoiler is they actually present differently.
They present differently, but now.
So tell us about it.
Yeah, a little bit further. Well, and we'll get to that in 2 seconds. But the bottom line is when females, we think the classic heart attack signs and symptoms, chest pain, an elephant sitting on a chest, shortness of breath,
Shortness of breath.
Breath.
What are you thinking about?
That's a double boo. Shortness of breath. I'm sorry, and sweating. Diaphoresis, right? But those are classically male signs of heart attacks. Sometimes pain shooting in the left arm. Sometimes shooting into the face. But women their signs can be a little bit different. They can have similar signs and symptoms, but also they can have signs that are not necessarily related to this, like fatigue, abdominal pain, pain in their neck. And remember, you've told the story a number of times of the gentleman that came
into the emergency room.
He was talking about having his throat hurting.
He got triaged to the ambulatory side of the emergency room because he said he had a sore throat.
Right, which the ambulatory side, thinking he's not as serious.
Really, thought he had
a cold or something.
And what he was really trying to say is, I have chest pain and it's radiating to my neck.
Throat, yeah.
If he had said that, he may be still alive today. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, that's what this article was just pointing out. And that was my key to this, is recognizing the fact that females do have some different signs than males.
Yeah.
But now, interestingly, it was talking a little bit lower.
They also die within a year of heart attack more often than men as well. Mm-hmm. So they have the heart attack. If they survive it, then within a year, they're more likely to be dead than a male.
And that's what I was just reading on this further down articles. They do not, females, which now this shocked me, and I'll have to do some more research on this, they don't follow through on cardiac rehab as much, and they don't follow the post-heart attack indications or plans set by their docs.
Yeah, and it may be.
Very strange.
This could be an issue of healthcare in the sense that women may have different expectations when they after a heart attack than men. This is, right. These people are saying this in Germany, that they're expected to start functioning again sooner, which means they're subject to bigger stresses. Now, this is a German study and a German author.
Look who's calling.
What a coincidence.
Quinkin.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Tacy, you're on Weird Medicine.
Uh-oh.
She's pissed.
She wasn't feeling very...
No.
Like being interviewed, I guess. But and Dr. Steve, the reason I say this is because typically we think, you know, females have been much more proactive when it comes to their health, paying attention, getting into doctors more often, as far as normal routine medical visits,
yeah.
Right? Typically, men push things off until they're just train wrecks.
Yeah,
and again, that's a broad generalization too.
October study was done in Germany, and there could be some cultural thing. I don't know. I would like to see if this has been reproduced in the United States, because this guy says in everyday life, women often face different expectations after a heart attack than men. This is from Technical University of Munich. They're expected to start functioning sooner, which means that they are subject to bigger stresses. Our study shows it's important to pay close attention to female patients, especially in the first year after the event. So let's try that in the United States. Let's see if women in the U.S. die from myocardial. We could have probably done this research ahead of time. Heart disease is the leading cause of death for women in the United States, killing, 300,000 women in 2013. That's one in every four female deaths. It says here, around the same number of women and men die each year of heart disease in the United States. So I'm looking at this map. Holy moly. Boy, the Southeast, particularly Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, pretty rough on the women having heart attacks. That's the highest rate, up to 931 per 100,000 in that lowest part near the Gulf. Let's see what they say here. Almost two-thirds of women who die suddenly of coronary artery disease have no previous symptoms. And so even if you have no symptoms, you may still be at risk for heart disease. So it says, while some women have no symptoms, others experience dull, heavy, sharp chest pain. These may occur during rest, begin during physical activity, or be triggered by mental stress. So
Let's just talk about the classic symptoms of a heart attack first. The classic symptoms, the elephant on your chest, shortness of breath, maybe palpitations, meaning, you know, a thumping in your chest, skip beats, sweating, nausea, vomiting, those kinds of things, shortness of breath. Classically, this will occur. You may have these when you're not having a heart attack, but you're having angina, which is, you know, the pain that comes before a heart attack. When you have activity, you go upstairs,
right,
and all of a sudden you have a little chest pain. Maybe it goes away and you don't think about it. And then you go upstairs again, you have it again. My dad had shoulder pain. And so when he had his treadmill test, when my brother was giving him his treadmill test, because we lived in the middle of nowhere, and my brother was the only doctor in town at the time, so he was my dad's doctor. He gave him a treadmill, and he started to see the classic signs of ischemia,
right,
in other words, lack of blood going to the heart, and in the lower leads 2, 3, and AVF, doesn't matter what that is, but there's 12 leads. There were three of them. That lets you think that the ischemia is in the bottom part of the heart. Well, he saw that, and my brother said, well, are you having any symptoms? He's like, well, I'm having that shoulder pain. And then that's when he realized his shoulder pain was actually heart pain.
And can I just to clarify, just to make sure that everybody that doesn't know anatomy of the heart maybe so much as we do, when we're talking about the blood getting to the heart, we're not talking inside the heart chambers. We're talking to the little.
That's right.
We're talking the little blood vessels that are on outside
coronary arteries.
That feed the muscles that cause the heart. Because you know, typically they'll still have blood in the heart chambers themselves.
Yeah, you would think that the blood is full. Heart is full of blood. Yeah. Why wouldn't it just feed itself? But it really doesn't work that way.
Doesn't work that way. Yeah, and that, I think that's important to remember. Those are the arteries on the outside of the heart that feed the muscles.
Right.
Carrying oxygen. That's where you see the ischemia typically.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have. So you've got your aorta, and the aorta is the big vessel coming out of the heart. And just as it comes out of the heart, it will have a couple of outlets. There's a left main coronary artery and then a right coronary artery. And the right coronary artery kind of goes around the right side of the heart to the bottom. And then the left main splits into a left anterior descending artery, which is the artery that goes down the front of the heart, and then another one called the circumflex, which circumflexes the heart. It goes around the back of the heart.
Yeah.
And from there, all these little branches will come out of those main arteries. And those are the ones that will get clogged. And when they get clogged, the part of the heart that they feed will not get enough blood supply, and then you can see that on this cardiogram or other things that we can do. We can do a thallium stress test, and you'll see that there's less oxygen being used in one part of the heart. It kind of shows up as a dark hole in the blood distribution to the heart, and that gives you an idea that there's a blockage there. The gold standard, of course, is doing a catheterization.
Right.
So now, because there's three main coronary arteries, but that left main artery, the one that we talked about, is it comes out of the aorta and then splits into two. If you get a clog there, you're getting 2/3 of the heart or more is no longer getting oxygen, and that's the so-called widowmaker.
Yeah, that's the bad one.
And with that one, we take personally because that's what GVAC has.
That's what GVAC, yeah.
And so if you're interested, if you have any risk factors at all, first-degree relative with early heart attack, in other words, heart attack before the age of 65, if you have high cholesterol, high blood pressure, if you're a smoker, you can go get a cardiac test that costs about $50, and it's a calcium score. It's a CT. You lay down in between cycles. They'll do these between cases because it really only takes about 30 seconds to do. You lay down, they do the scan, and then they'll read it, and they can tell you what your risk of having a heart attack in the next 10 years is.
I want to tell you a really quick story if you got 2 seconds.
Yeah, of course. We have 20 minutes and 25 seconds to kill. So
great story. Ahead. Blues Traveler, one of my favorite bands, John Popper.
Okay.
Used to be morbidly obese.
Yep.
Lost
the guy who just noodles on that harmonica.
Wears out a harmonica.
Well, he doesn't wear it out. He just noodles on it. He just plays a bunch of notes.
He blows it out. He's the best.
He's
the best I've ever heard.
Okay.
But anyway, so he was, like I said, morbidly obese. He had a heart attack. Well, how he figured out he was having a heart attack. Now, this is a true story. He tells this. He was laying in bed. He was watching a porno. He was giving himself some pleasure, masturbating. Well, about the time he'd start getting really into it, he'd notice he started having chest pain.
Uh-huh.
And so he stopped, and he thought, and the chest pain went away. Then he did it again. There he is. It's about the third time he blew into the, or got ready to really get excited. He started having severe chest pains. He thought, maybe I should stop this and go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Went and found his blockage. I guess my assumption is they did a stent on him. He's lost probably 100 pounds, and sounds great.
Wow.
That is a true story.
Yeah, good for him. Dang. Well, anyway.
Blues traveler.
I'm not a fan of his harmonica playing.
Oh, I love it.
Let me see. Here he's playing it on Covino and Rich. Let's see what he did here. If he would just do something melodic with it, but he just plays a shitload of notes.
Oh, it's a ton of notes, yeah.
He's
got a big old breath.
I don't know what the hell he's doing there. He's just playing. I just hear a shitload of notes.
No, that's one of
those. I know I feel like the emperor in Amadeus. Yeah. Amadeus.
Amadeus. By the way, that was his song called Oh shit.
I would defy you if I isolated all of his harmonica solos, if you could tell one from the other.
There's one that was a song called Run Around, I guarantee it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I may have to stand corrected on this, but the emperor listened to the magic flute in Amadeus, and he said, Mozart, it has too many notes. And, of course, Mozart looks at the emperor and says, well, just tell me which ones to remove. You know, I'll do that when people come to me and say, well, my mom is on too much medicine. It's like, well, tell me which ones to take her off of.
I'll be happy to take her off.
All of that. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Mm-mm-mm.
All right. Where are we at? Where are we at with all this?
Next question.
All right. Well, that didn't play.
Hey, Dr. Steve, I know I keep leaving messages about weird stuff you suggest on the podcast, but not yesterday, but I think it was the day before yesterday, say Thursday, so like Monday or Tuesday, anyway.
Anyway.
I signed up for the Noom app that you were talking about, and so far, like yesterday was the first day that I fully logged my, you know, entire day. And the accountability really helps. Like,
yes,
I've tried, you know, my Fitness Pal.
Okay, what she's talking about is I'm doing that thing. They're not a sponsor, called Noom. Mm-hmm. It's an app, and I talked about it on the show. Sure. I've lost 21, 22 pounds on it now, and one of the aspects of it is accountability. I have to report every single thing I put in my mouth to my counselor. Mm-hmm. And she listens to the show. So I, you know, she got a little frustrated with me because I said, you know, she's so hot that I didn't want to. Well, the feminist part of me doesn't like that it's about my looks. But it's like, no, that's a dude thing.
Yes.
You know, I have no shot with her. No. It's not that. No. It's just that she's
attractive,
hot.
Yeah.
She's attractive. Yep. And I don't want to admit to her that I ate a whole bag of freaking Snickers. So I don't do it.
Yep.
So that's what she's talking about. So let's see what she had to say.
Tried, you know, like a quote-unquote accountability through, like, gyms and friends going to the gym with me and all this other kind of stuff. And it never worked. But
it did work for me going to the gym when I had a friend that I went with every single time. And that was in medical school. I had a friend who was a ham radio operator, and that's where we knew each other. And we would meet at the gym three times a week and encourage each other. That made a difference. And that was the one time when I was actually buff, was because he and I would compete against each other. Who can curl the most on the, you know, on the Nautilus curling machine? We got to the point where, you know, we could curl the max on the Nautilus machine. And, you know, I was in really good shape. But you got to have somebody like that. They got to go with you every single time.
Yes.
So I agree with her on that.
You have somebody like, you know, actually holding you accountable for.
Oh, anyway, yes, I agree. Accountability is huge. That's for me, that's what I needed. Because before that, I could say, well, I'll just have four Snickers because they don't bother my stomach, so they must be good for me because everything else seems to bother my stomach anymore. And then, well, I'd go back, well, I'll just have a handful this time. And the next thing I knew, I'd eaten a whole bag. And I was just going up and up and up in weight. And since I've had this accountability, it's not just that, but that was a big part of it, just the ability to have to tell somebody, uh-oh, I screwed up. And I don't want to tell them I screwed up so I don't screw up. Now, it'll be interesting when I'm no longer in the program. But I've forged new habits. It's been 100 days. And I'm eating differently without even thinking about it now. You know?
Good.
So, but anyway. So, yeah, accountability is a big deal.
How
so,
much have you lost?
21, 22. Yeah, I'm going for 33 total. So that'll be at my ideal body weight. My BMI is below 25, which I'm not a big fan of BMI, but is below 20. It's all we got. below 25, so I'm no longer considered overweight by medical standards, which is the first time in my adult life.
But the key is, how do you feel?
A million. I feel like a million bucks.
Yeah.
People notice. That's the first thing. People notice, well, hey, you look pretty good. I've lost so much weight I can no longer fit in my expensive hospital clothes. So Brooks Brothers is losing a bunch of money because I was like, I can either buy a shitload more Brooks Brothers pants and shirts, or I can just switch to scrubs. So I decided to switch to scrubs. And I feel better in these. It's a lot, hell of a lot more comfortable. I always look, you know, I don't fit. I just look crappy anyway. I got a stupid body. It's just too straight. And when it's not straight and I got a gut, then it's disgusting. So I just feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. I've got more energy. Just, you know, yeah.
Better.
Yeah, just
period.
Better.
It's
feel
all
better.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I'm actually now, for the first time in my life, I'm motivated to actually work out and stuff too, which I, of course, have not done, but I'm motivated to do it.
Well, don't start jogging. That's how you blew up your...
I know. No, I'm not.
Your leg last time.
I did. I don't know what was wrong with me thinking I was going to... Oh, I know what it was. My kid.
You're running as a Kate. Yeah, you're running with...
Son was doing cross country, and right. It looked like, that looks like fun. And I didn't realize that he was a semi-elite athlete. And when I would see him come around the corner in front of everybody, and I'd be cheering, that wasn't going to be me. So, and then I tore my gastrocnemius muscle, which for those of you who are lay people, which is most everybody that's listening to this, hopefully, that was my calf muscle. I ripped it in two, and that talk about pain. And then I looked stupid. I'm in the middle of this track at the middle school, and I'm just laying down holding my leg like a big baby, yes. And I had to limp home. This is terrible. Jogging sucks.
It's a terrible idea.
So,
oh my gosh!
And I almost fell. I almost bought one of those $2,500 elliptico things because I thought that would be fun. It's an elliptical bicycle,
sure.
Where you stand on it, you don't sit because I don't want to sit on a bike because I don't want to get pudendal neuropathy.
Get your prostate all pissed off at you.
Yeah, and your dick too. Your dick can go numb if you don't sit on that thing right. If you're gonna be a bike rider, by the way, look for seats that support the back part of your ass and don't make your taint put a bunch of weight on a real narrow thing.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that. So, but I have found a virtual reality thing, exercise workout, and I'm going to try that.
Okay.
See, because that's what I really want is an exercise bike that's hooked up to a virtual reality, and then like you run away from aliens or something, and the faster you pedal, the right. less you get killed, or you know, that you may have a spaceship or something, you're going through an asteroid field. I think that would be that I would do.
Yeah, that would be cool. It'd be cool if you could be like it'd be cool if you could put yourself into like one of those virtual reality games, the shoot 'em up games, where you could be like the person trying to avoid getting shot.
Yes, but it's all dependent on how fast you're going on the bike, and maybe it would change. Like if you're going uphill, it would change the resistance and stuff like that. I would love that.
That'd be cool.
I found one online, but it's not quite ready for prime time yet. Mm-hmm. But if anybody knows anything like that that would work with the Oculus Go, let me know. All right. Let's try. Oh, here's one for you. Let's see. I thought it was. Oh, yeah, here you go. This is a question for Dr.
Hey, Scott. Dr. Steve. Got a question for you. 43 years old. I go to the gym 5 days a week, and I have a yearly physical. And before my last physical, I decided to try something different. So for 6 months, we went vegan. So I cut out all meat, chicken, eggs, dairy. If it had a mother, I didn't eat it. No honey and no gelatin. And to boot, I also cut out alcohol and carbonated drinks. So some bread.
Oh wait, I think I just booed over the important part.
Consisting mainly of fruits, vegetables, and bread, and I made sure the bread didn't have any eggs or milk in it either. And that also left me with a protein and soy based diet. And we did that for 6 months. So when I get my labs back from the doctor, my total cholesterol has went from 196 to 228. And my triglycerides went from 264 to a whopping 554.
Mm-hmm.
And I gained 14 pounds.
What so the, my where question the laughing to you
go? Is, what the hell? Thank you very much.
I fucked that up. I hit all the wrong buttons. But anyway.
Well,
so.
We know what to tell you.
He went on a totally plant-based diet.
Right, vegan-based diet.
And he gained weight, and his cholesterol and his triglycerides went up. So what did he do wrong? If anything.
Well, you know, it sounds like to me, Dr. Steve, he fell into that same habit a lot of people get into. They read these things that say healthy or organic or are all good for you, and they don't read in there and look at the ingredients where there's a lot of hidden sugars. And you'll get
Sugar itself is vegan.
That's correct. And I think that's
table sugar is vegan.
Yeah, because you think about
honey is not.
No, but still, yeah, it's the hidden sugars. If you notice, the one interesting thing he said is triglycerides shot up. So his liver is being overstimulated with these sugars, kicks that up, and that kicks up the production of the cholesterol too. So you know what you want to
carbohydrates are the enemy, not fats.
Right, that's correct. So you know what it looks like to me is that he was trying to do the right thing, but he wound up eating the foods that were absolutely categorically wrong. If you want to be a true vegan and not gain any weight, you have to eat kind of like an ape. And wild, you know, and eat 16 pounds of spinach and kale and stuff daily, and then that won't happen. You'll get all your protein.
Can you get enough protein from
that? Absolutely. Yeah, you know what they found is that one of the reasons that animals in the wild specifically, and I can speak specifically to apes, that eat these, they get a very small amount of animal protein in the bugs and stuff that are on the leaves.
Right.
And they found that in captivity, actually. But so what he was
doing... Well, that's interesting because they'd wash their food.
They washed
when
it,
they gave
clean
it to him
and, right, and took
in
all
captivity.
The bugs. Yep. Took all the bugs off it. That's exactly right. So this gentleman had a good idea, but the bottom line is if he's eating a bunch of rice, if he's eating a bunch of bread, if he's eating these things, the grains that convert in your bloodstream almost instantly to sugar, spiking your serum glucose, it's spiking triglycerides, it spikes your cholesterol. He had it close, but I would say... Stop the sugar, you know, the fruit drinks. Stop the fruit. I hate to say it.
Well, cut down on the fruit.
Yeah, or at least cut down on the fruit. And absolutely cut down on all the grains and the rices, et cetera. Go back to the green leafy vegetables if you want to be vegan. But I'm a huge fan of, again, moderation. I think a little bit of meat, you know, we talk about a lot of times on here the pescatarian diets.
Yeah.
Based mostly on veggies and fish. That's kind of the diet that I go to. So he was close.
Yeah.
He just had a bunch. You know, I think in retrospect, he can look back and see there were a bunch of hidden sugars in there, and that's what derailed him.
Sure. I see a lot of vegans who get fat, and their indices don't do well because they're eating a lot of pasta and potatoes. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, other things. And so starches are just sugars that are chained together.
Right.
So pasta, whole grain pasta, even.
Sure. Even
potatoes,
any pasta, period.
Any of that stuff. And they're filling and they taste good. And it's like, well, I can't have all these other things, but I can eat all the damn potatoes I want, and then that's the problem.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I'm just reading, vegan diets a lot of times just rely too heavily on carbs.
Yep.
And there's a report in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it says 99% of our genes were formed before the development of agriculture and the consumption of grains like wheat around 10,000 years ago, which you and I have been talking about for a long time, that our ancestors didn't have gluten and a lot of wheat in their diet because they hadn't developed agriculture yet. And these things are a mismatch with our genes for a lot of people. And then you refine it and you hybridize stuff and you spray stuff and genetic modification, whether it's through GMO type stuff or just Mendelian genetic modification. You know, we're eating things that our bodies didn't evolve to process very well.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, so yeah, that's probably what's going on there. And I'm with Scott. I think green leafy vegetables applies in another place too. These people that are eating ketogenic diets, if they're just eating meat, they're malnourished. They will lose weight, but they're losing weight because they're malnourished.
Right. You know, there's as much protein in a head of broccoli as there is in a filet mignon.
Is that right?
Yep. And you think about it, those, you know, rhinoceros is...
You're right.
Giraffes, et cetera.
Herbivores must be getting protein.
They get
somewhere.
Protein from plants, but the reason they do is because they eat such massive amounts.
Yeah.
Right. They're not protein dense, but there's adequate protein if you eat enough of it. Which is you know what you and I we have to eat at certain times because we have jobs and families and blah blah blah. But you know if we're living in the out in the jungle and you know, we're going to eat and sleep most of the time. You can kind of eat at your leisure throughout the day and get those calories, but we just can't do that.
Okay, so I'll give you some vegetables and you tell me, we don't have enough time for this stupid game.
Okay.
Weirdly, and this one surprises me, one of the vegetables highest in protein is watercress.
Yeah.
Cruciferous plant grows in water, has a high protein content. 1 cup of chopped watercress contains 0.8 grams of protein, 100% of vitamin K and B vitamins. Okay, let's see here. How about spinach? Protein accounts for 30% of its calories.
Mm.
I love spinach. Raw spinach is my favorite
thing
as far as vegetables are concerned.
Kale and Swiss chard and things of that nature.
Yeah, Chinese cabbage, bok choy, asparagus, and also you can piss and stink up the bathroom. 1 cup contains 2.9 grams of protein. Mustard greens, blech. Okay, broccoli. 1 cup serving of raw chopped broccoli has 2.6 grams of protein.
Mm.
And all the essential amino acids. Also contains folate, manganese, potassium, phosphorus, and vitamin C. So people who are on a ketogenic diet, if they will skew highly toward the green leafy vegetables and lean animal protein, that's a reasonably safe and effective diet for people. I'm not a big fan of diets per se, but as a lifestyle, it's reasonable, particularly if you're gluten sensitive like I am. You know, and don't want to eat a bunch of potatoes because that's what gained a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, all right. Well, I'm looking to see if we have any dick or nut questions. Well, I have a Cialis question.
I'll say I had a masturbation.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, no.
Hey, Dr. Steve, this is
okay,
the...
You want to do it and we'll save
no,
this
that
one
was
for next
that
time?
John Popper thing. Yeah.
Oh,
Swinger guy that had called a while back about the projectile ability of ejaculation and also about Viagra versus Cialis. I have a question relating to the Viagra versus Cialis. Blue Chew, is it safe? Does it actually use the ingredients?
Okay, so I don't know anything about Blue Chew, but if they're FDA approved and they are selling what they say is the same ingredient as Viagra, then that's sildenafil, then yes, that would be safe as long as there's no contraindications. Mm-hmm. The deal with these, we only got 30 seconds, is that compounding pharmacies can make a chewable Viagra because there isn't one commercially on the market. Mm-hmm. So they can make anything that's not commercially on the market And you can go to any compounding pharmacy and get Viagra lozenges and, you know, and chewables and stuff like that. And those are perfectly legal and they're just as safe as the regular. So anyway, you can even get your local compounding pharmacy to make some of those for you. Just talk to them and let us know if you try it. Make sure you don't have any contraindications. You're not taking nitrates or alpha blockers or you have other reasons not to take these medications. They will drop your blood pressure in the presence of other medications, and there have been known to be some serious adverse effects in people who are taking them not as prescribed or for whom they shouldn't have been prescribed in the first place. All right. Have a great week. Thanks always go to Dr. Scott. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Eric Nagel, Roland Campos, Eton Twats. Happy birthday, Eton, my good man. Willie Fistergash, Lou Stuhl, Eileen Ulick, Safonda Cox, and none other than the inimitable Hugh Jasshole, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose early support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM Channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quick smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.